From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, the Battle for New York.
I accept your nomination for President of the United States.
It's official. George W. Bush was coronated last night at the Republican National Convention. He'll fight for another 4 years against Democrat, for another 4 months against Democrat John Kerry. While thousands protested in the streets last night, inside, several lone souls got in.
Yes, I am inside behind the Texas delegation with my sign, with some picture, and say, Bush lie and who die.
The Republican convention is over, but hundreds of people police arrested during the week remain in jail.
I'm now in a situation where my son has been disappeared by this state, by the government of this country.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, the Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. A New York State judge yesterday ordered the city of New York to release about 500 prisoners arrested during mass protests against President Bush during the Republican National Convention. The judge ruled the police had illegally held the protesters without charge for more than 40 hours. Civil Liberties attorney Norman Siegel accused the city of attempting to hold the protesters until after President Bush spoke at the convention. Manhattan criminal court judge John Cataldo held city officials in contempt of court for failing to release the more than 500 detained demonstrators by 5 p.m. The judge threatened to impose a fine of $1,000 per day for each person kept in custody longer than 24 hours without being arraigned. During the past week of protests, police have arrested some 1,800 people, nearly three times as many arrests made during the historic 1968 convention in Chicago. Nearly two-thirds of the arrests took place Tuesday in what the Associated Press is now calling one of the largest mass arrests in the country's history, the largest in New York City. No president has ever faced larger protests during a political convention. Inside Madison Square Garden, just 3 miles from Ground Zero, President Bush last night accepted his party's nomination for president and called for the continuation of the so-called war on terror, claiming the U.S. is the greatest force for good on earth. Bush vowed to continue a foreign policy based on preemptive attacks and the idea that is Washington's duty to spread its form of freedom across the globe. Bush said, quote, I believe America's called to lead the cause of freedom in a new century. On domestic issues, President Bush reached out to the socially conservative wing of the party, condemning abortion, same-sex marriages, and so-called activist judges. Bush and other speakers attempted to paint his opponent, Senator John Kerry, as an undecisive leader who flip-flops on major issues, including the war on terror, the Patriot Act, and the invasion of Iraq. But President Bush was criticized by many for failing to outline how he would accomplish his goals. The Washington Post reports the speech was big on ambitions, but, quote, far shorter on the ways or the means to accomplish them. Bush's speech was disrupted twice by members of Code Pink. The anti-war group has managed to infiltrate the convention each of the last 3 nights. Outside Madison Square Garden, thousands protested in the streets against Bush. Police reported around 30 arrests on yesterday, including 18 members of the AIDS advocacy group Housing Works near Grand Central. Democracy Now! Camera person Daniel Cashin was briefly arrested while covering the event, but charges were later dropped. The Washington Post reporting the FBI is investigating whether Pentagon officials leaked classified information to Iraqi politician Ahmed Chalabi, who headed the Iraqi National Congress. The revelation comes a week after it emerged the FBI was investigating whether a top analyst in the Pentagon was spying for Israel. According to the Washington Post, the two investigators are part of a larger counterintelligence probe, the scope of which is still not clear. The New York Sun's reporting Attorney General John Ashcroft has ordered the FBI not to make any arrests in the Israeli spy FBI case investigation. In Florida, more than 2.5 million residents have been ordered to evacuate their homes as the state prepares to be hit by a major hurricane for the second time in 3 weeks. Hurricane Frances is expected to hit Florida by mid-morning. 3 weeks ago, Hurricane Charley hit Florida, killing at least 27 people. Hurricane Frances is a massive hurricane stretching 1,000 miles across roughly the width of Texas. Over 90% of Florida residents live in areas under hurricane watches and warnings. The evacuation order is the largest in state history. In Russia, troops have stormed a school where hundreds of students and adults are being held. Reuters is reporting some of the hostages' takes have been shot dead, but the fate of the hostages remains unclear. Many people covered in blood have been able to free the premises. The number of people killed is unknown. A roof in the school collapsed, and the BBC reports parts of the school have been blown up. Some of the survivors say the total number of people inside may be far higher than previously estimated. Police had originally said about 300 hostages had been taken, but one survivor said about 1,500 people are inside. Over the past months, Russia has suffered a series of attacks, including the twin plane crashes that killed 89 and a suicide car bombing that killed 10. This is Democracy Now! Breaking with convention. War, peace, and the presidency. The battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And welcome to all of you. President Bush accepted his party's nomination for another term in the White House last night in Madison Square Garden. His speech wrapped up the Republican National Convention and kicked off a two-month race to the November 2nd election against Democratic challenger John Kerry. The four-day Republican convention in New York was marked by historic protests and acts of dissent on the streets. On Sunday, hundreds of thousands of protesters marched in the largest demonstration ever at a political convention. Over the course of the week, thousands of people took to the streets, staging scores of rallies, direct actions, and acts of civil disobedience against the Bush administration. Though the protests were largely calm, arrests exceeded 1,700 for the week, a record for a political convention.
Last night, President Bush used his hour-long primetime address to defend his record over the past 4 years, particularly his decision to invade Iraq. His speech began and ended with references to the September 11th attacks, which have been referenced in nearly every major speech at the convention. He also promised to simplify the tax system, allow private investments of Social Security funds, and push policies that would make it easier to own homes, though he offered few details. The other major speaker of the night was New York Governor George Pataki, who took the stage to introduce the president. In today's program, we will bring you excerpts of the president's speech. We will also go to people who manage to get into the convention and disrupt it. We will then continue to talk about dissent and protests from the streets to the convention. Juan, this has been quite a remarkable week, unprecedented in the history of this country, the massive amount of protest. This is certainly the largest protest in the history of political conventions in this country.
Yes, in terms of the numbers of people that participated and the scope and the breadth of the demonstrations, it certainly was unprecedented. I think that the numbers certainly, as you mentioned earlier, were much larger than those in Chicago in 1968. However, the 68 convention in Chicago, the Democratic Convention, of course, had much bigger national impact because of the enormous violence that occurred, the tear gassing of demonstrators that also got into the actual convention itself and then affected the delegates as well. And also, I think what a lot of people don't realize is I've been hearing from people around the country that the national media basically have not covered these protests. So in the rest of the country, while in New York City, there's been enormous impact. The national press have pretty much kept the protests out of any kind of spotlight. The difference in Chicago was that the national press covered the actual demonstrations and the violence of the Chicago police. So it had a much bigger impact on the public consciousness. I guess the media have gotten a lot smarter in terms of being able to figure out how to get a particular message across to the public.
I guess it was then that the chant became famous. The whole world is watching.
Right. And then because of the national media coverage, the whole world was watching. This time, a lot of the rest of the world has not really gotten the sense of what's been occurring on the streets of New York over the past week.
Well, we're going to turn now to New York Governor George Pataki, who took the stage to introduce President Bush.
George Bush raised our spirits. He came to New York and stood on that smoking heap, looked at our heroes and said, "I can hear you, and soon the whole world will hear you." He declared a new doctrine. The United States would find and remove terrorists, whoever they are and wherever they are. And if you harbor them, there will be hell to pay. He mobilized our forces and went to Afghanistan, where the United States fought and won a war. Al-Qaeda camps were pulverized, the Taliban deposed. George Bush protected our country, and he protects it still. With supreme guts and rightness, President Bush went into Iraq. The U.S. had asked for peace, went to the U.N. time and again, asked Saddam to step aside, but Saddam would not be moved. So President Bush moved him. Our American troops, our citizen soldiers, and the coalition of the willing moved him. And soon a dictator who had used poison gas on his own people was found cowering in the earth. Some people have called this an abuse of power. I call it progress. There are those who still say that there was no reason to liberate Iraq. They ask about weapons of mass destruction. On September 11th, in New York, we learned that in the hands of a monster, a box cutter is a weapon of mass destruction. And Saddam Hussein was a monster, a walking, talking weapon of mass destruction. It is good for the world that he is gone.
New York Governor George Pataki speaking on the floor of the convention last night. The final speaker at the convention was President Bush. He delivered his address on a circular platform specially constructed to place him closer to the delegates in the arena. Despite the party's extensive orchestration efforts, the president was interrupted twice by hecklers as he delivered his speech.
This is an excerpt of President Bush's convention speech.
3 days. days after September the 11th, I stood where Americans died, in the ruins of the Twin Towers. Workers in hard hats were shouting to me, "Whatever it takes." A fellow grabbed me by the arm and he said, "Do not let me down." Since that day, I wake up every morning thinking about how to better protect our country. I will never relent in defending America, whatever it takes. We have fought the terrorists across the earth, not for pride, not for power, but because the lives of our citizens are at stake. Our strategy is clear. We've tripled funding for Homeland Security and trained 500,000 first responders because we're determined to protect our homeland. We're transforming our military and reforming and strengthening our intelligence services. We are staying on the offensive, striking terrorists abroad so we do not have to face them here at home. And we are working to advance liberty in the broader Middle East because freedom will bring a future of hope and the peace we all want. And we will prevail. Our strategy is succeeding. 4 years ago, Afghanistan was the home base of Al-Qaeda. Pakistan was a transit point for terrorist groups. Saudi Arabia was fertile ground for terrorist fundraising. Libya was secretly pursuing nuclear weapons. Iraq was a gathering threat, and Al-Qaeda was largely unchallenged as it planned attacks. Today, the government of a free Afghanistan is fighting terror. Pakistan is capturing terrorist leaders. Saudi Arabia is making raids and arrests. Libya is dismantling its weapons programs. The army of a free Iraq is fighting for freedom. And more than three quarters of Al-Qaeda's key members and associates have been detained or killed. We have led, many have joined, and America and the world are safer. This progress involved careful diplomacy, clear moral purpose, and some tough decisions. And the toughest came on Iraq. We knew Saddam Hussein's record of aggression and support for terror. We knew his long history of pursuing, even using, weapons of mass destruction. And we know that September the 11th requires our country to think differently. We must, and we will, confront threats to America before it is too late. In Saddam Hussein, we saw a threat. Members of both political parties, including my opponent and his running mate, saw the threat and voted to authorize the use of force. We went to the United Nations Security Council, which passed a unanimous resolution demanding the dictator disarm or face serious consequences. Leaders in the Middle East urged him to comply. After more than a decade of diplomacy, we gave Saddam Hussein another chance, a final chance, to meet his responsibilities to the civilized world. He again refused. And I faced the kind of decision that comes only to the Oval Office, a decision no president would ask for, but must be prepared to make. Do I forget the lessons of September the 11th and take the word of a madman? Or do I take action to defend our country? Faced with that choice, I will defend America every time.
President Bush, last night at the Republican National Convention. This is Democracy Now! We'll get reaction when we come back. Stay with us.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
This is Democracy Now! Breaking with convention. War, peace, and the presidency, the battle for New York, broadcasting on the largest public media collaboration in the country, 240 radio and television stations, Pacifica stations, NPR stations, public access TV stations, PBS, as well as both satellite networks, Dish Network Channel 375, Link TV, and that's DirecTV, and Dish Network's Channel 9415, Free Speech TV. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. While much of the protest at the RNC took place outside Madison Square Garden, a surprising number of activists managed to disrupt the proceedings inside for the third night in a row. People from Code Pink, Women for Peace, were ejected from the Republican National Convention after disrupting primetime addresses of speakers at the convention podium. Last night, during President Bush's acceptance speech, he had to stop speaking twice after activists held up anti-war signs before being dragged from the floor of Madison Square Garden. Jody Evans revealed a pink slip underneath her dress that read, "Fire Bush, women say bring the troops home now." Earlier in the evening, Jorge Medina, whose son Irving was killed in the invasion of Iraq, was ejected for wearing a T-shirt with his son's photo on it and the words, "Bush lied, my son died."
When the protesters disrupted Bush's speech, delegates and others in the convention would begin chanting "four more years" in an effort to drown them out. This tactic seemed to have been a coordinated response from the Republicans. Twice last night, as Bush was speaking, the chant began for no clear reason. Moments later, Secret Service agents could be seen dragging a demonstrator from the convention.
Earlier in the week, Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin came within 30 feet of Vice President Dick Cheney as he sat in his box. She unfurled a pink banner that read, "Pro-life, stop the killing in Iraq." She also managed to ask Cheney, "How much money have you made in Iraq today?" She was picked up by Secret Service agents, dragged from the floor down a staircase. That same night, Fernando Suarez del Solar was also ejected from the convention. His son Jesus was killed in Iraq, March 2003. He stood near the Texas delegation and held up a sign that read, "Bush lied, my son died."
The following night, as Dick Cheney was giving his primetime address, Code Pink activists Gail Murphy and Tiffany Burns unfurled a banner that read, "Cheney and Halliburton making a killing in Iraq."
Before we go to those protesters, we're going to turn now to Sam Husseini. Sam Husseini is with the Institute for Public Accuracy, was watching President Bush's speech last night. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Sam.
Good to be here.
Your reaction?
Well, you could go through a lot of stuff in this speech. The big lie was the clip that you played a moment ago, Amy, when he said, we told Saddam to comply, the Arab leaders told him to comply, and so on and so forth, and he refused. That's a lie. Saddam Hussein didn't refuse. He allowed the weapons inspectors in. The weapons inspectors were doing their work. He gave over 10,000 pages of documents. He was in the process of dismantling the Al-Samud missiles, which were slightly over the range that was permitted, and so on. He was disarming. It's not that Saddam Hussein refused. It's that Bush chose to stop the inspections process, and Bush chose war. This wasn't a tough choice that, oh my God, he's refusing, he might have something. We're going to have to go to war to prevent this. The inspections process was happening, and Bush stopped it and wanted to go to war. It seems quite likely now because there's nothing there. You don't want the inspections process to continue if you're not going to find anything in the inspections process now, do you? That's the big lie, that Saddam Hussein refused after we gave him chance after chance after chance.
And Sam, he continued linking throughout
war.
And Sam, the continued linking throughout the convention of terrorism to Saddam Hussein, despite all of the evidence that has now come out to the contrary. Your reactions to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there is that. And the sort of blurring of, you know, terror baiting everybody from Saddam Hussein to the protesters to everybody else, but everybody was watching. It's amazing to me that Bush can still lie about the central question of how this war started, and with all of the mea culpas put out by the New York Times and the Washington Post, we didn't scrutinize the administration's remarks enough about their claims about weapons of mass destruction. Well, if there was a scintilla of truth and honesty to those mea culpas, if the press in the United States was genuinely repentant about taking Bush's word for claims about weapons of mass destruction, where are they now? He last night, in front of everybody, said Saddam Hussein refused to comply with his disarmament obligations.
Well, as for finding weapons of mass destruction, he has finessed this at this point, and that is to say that Saddam Hussein is a weapon of mass destruction, and they found him.
Well, that could go both ways now, couldn't it?
Well, and what do you mean?
Well, I mean, if Saddam Hussein is a weapon of mass destruction, what's George Bush? This sort of hand-waving, Saddam Hussein did bad things, and therefore that's weapons of mass destruction. Well, George Bush did bad things, and therefore, you know, what follows from that?
Right. Well, that's obviously not George Bush's argument, but they have managed to turn that around. And speaking with many delegates, the repeated point that they made is it just doesn't matter. Saddam Hussein is a bad person. But the capper last night was actually equating the two. Saddam Hussein weapon of mass destruction. Sam Husseini, thanks for being with us. We're going to turn now to our guests in the studio who did manage to get into the convention. They aren't delegates. They were protesters, and despite the very heavy security, made it inside. Let's listen for a moment to Medea Benjamin as she was just yards from Dick Cheney.
Stop the killing in Iraq! Mr. Cheney! Stop the killing in Iraq! Mr. Cheney! How much money did you make on the war? Mr. Cheney! How much money did you make?
Then Medea Benjamin was brought down the stairs head first. She joins us in the studio right now. Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, along with Gail Murphy, who also managed to get into the convention. First of all, how'd you do it?
Well, the amazing thing is that we had lots of opportunities to get in. We had drunk Republicans who gave us their passes. We had some journalists who gave us their passes. The best one of all was last night, Bush's speech. We had one person, June Brashears, who you see being dragged across the floor. She got in with no credential.
In the largest security operation the city has seen, what, $60 million went into it?
No credential to get in there, and she got on to the floor. I mean, we wanted to make our point about the war, but we also wanted to make the point that three nights in a row, the heads of Code Pink and June, who is a global exchange staff person, managed to pierce the inner sanctums of this convention with an anti-war message, but another subtext saying, you can't secure your own convention. How are you going to secure this nation?
My passes started to get so heavy on my neck because you had to wear, you know, all different kinds along with your ID around your neck. She had nothing.
She said it slipped out. She was very upset and saying, I can't find it, slipped out of here. And they said, oh, sorry about that, and gave her an extra one for last night.
Medea, you hold the rare distinction of not only being thrown out of the Republican National Convention, but the Democratic National Convention as well. With the same message. Explain.
Well, we thought it was important to be nonpartisan around this. You know, our issues are not about individuals, they're around policies. Sure, we saved our fury for this Republican convention, but we were at the Democratic convention to say to Mr. Kerry, give us an anti-war alternative, or you're going to lose the base of people, even within your own party, 95% of whom, among the delegates, were against the war.
You almost made it out of the Republican National Convention, meaning you almost were able to stay, because when you unfurled that pink banner, at the top it said, pro-life, stop the killing in Iraq. And when the security came over to you, you said, but this is a pro-life banner. And they left you alone for a minute.
That's right. They were a little bit confused. I kept saying, it's on message. It's Republican. It's pro-life. So, it bought me an extra couple of seconds. But I think it's extraordinary, one, that Gail got in the next day. I mean, we talked to each other maybe about 100 times on the phone. You'd think the security would know her. And then the final day to get the third co-founder of Code Pink onto the floor, you have to wonder about the security that these guys are doing.
Well, of course, there was all of the attention in some of the tabloids in the weeks leading up to the convention about how the police were following around a whole group
56.
Of 56 people with
anarchists.
Teams of detectives. So nobody was following the three of you around.
They were. My picture was on the 20 sort of most wanted. They were following us.
Gail Murphy, talk about your action the night before last. We were standing just above the press section and then saw the commotion below. What did you do?
I found a spot where I could enter and within view of cameras and whatever media were around. And I went through. The usher saw that my pass didn't allow me onto the floor, but I could get close enough where I could take my shirt off and expose this pink slip that I was wearing that said Cheney's in bed with Halliburton, and we got screwed. So the Secret Service, I assume, jumped on me at that point. I did try to stay out of their way so that the cameras could get a good shot.
Now, you did something unusual. The way Madison Square Garden worked was that there were cameras on the floor to show delegates dancing and singing. Is it true that you stood in front of one of those cameras, and at the point where it was showing the floor where you were, that's when you did this? Were you on the, whatever you call it, the Globotron?
No, I simply walked through a passage toward the floor and got within, 5 feet of the floor.
Right. I thought you were captured by that camera at the point when they broadcast it there. But so you were taken out.
I was taken out.
And what happens when you're taken out? Are you just put outside? Are you arrested?
Well, I want to say before I was taken out, the Secret Service, at least three or four of them on top of me, I was in a chokehold flat on the floor. And one straddling me, who made a point of trying to announce to the folks around, and I assume to the media, that I was kicking and that I was resisting arrest, and I wasn't. I was completely still. So I think that's important to mention, that they were trying to trump up some kind of an assault charge, potentially.
But when they did take you out of the arena, what did they do with you?
They took me to the basement for about 3 hours, where I was interrogated by New York Police Department, Secret Service, as well as Homeland Security, repeatedly asked questions about my background, my psychological state of mind, and whether I was a real threat to the vice president.
Medea Benjamin, what did they ask you?
They asked me if I had a personal vendetta against Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was speaking at the time, or against the vice president.
Now, we should say that you did run for high office in California on the Green Party ticket.
Yes, Code Pink was also the most visible group that was protesting the candidacy of Arnold Schwarzenegger because of his sordid past around women and other issues. But I insisted I had no personal vendetta against these gentlemen. This is purely about policy issues. In my case, they actually let me go because they didn't want the press to know that we had infiltrated the convention. But when we did it the second day, they got livid about it. In fact, they kept Gail for about 24 hours, and our colleagues that are there from last night still haven't been let out. And they called the news media and said, why are you running those pictures?
So I think you had the distinction of being now arrested three times this in the week and a half or so, and twice that you managed to
let go.
And twice let go, yes.
We want to turn to Fernando Suarez del Solar, the father of Marine Lance Corporal Jesus Suarez, one of the first U.S. servicemen to die in Iraq, who also made it into the convention center and was thrown out. But before we do that, I thought we'd go to a few of the delegates and their wives who were leaving Madison Square Garden last night after the final big night.
Where are you from? What's your name?
Cincinnati, Ohio. Ron Bashir. I am.
And are you a delegate?
Honorary.
Honorary delegate.
What's your name?
Mary Bashir from Cincinnati also.
How about these guys?
And you guys?
I'm with him. He's a delegate.
Uh-huh. And your name?
I'm Rhonda Korn.
I'm Doug Korn from Cincinnati.
Uh-huh. And what do you think is the most important issue?
Absolutely keeping America safe.
I would agree.
Agree also.
I think it's the integrity of our leader. I think we need a leader we can trust, and I think George W. Bush is the man. So we're excited for him.
Have you heard, have you seen any of the protests outside?
Sure. America's a free place. God bless everybody. You know, go out and vote.
Have you seen much of it?
I've seen some, but all I've seen has been peaceful and well-respected, and I respect them.
I saw a little bit, but it seemed to all be under control. I didn't see any of the hoopla that you read about in the paper.
I just arrived today, and I haven't seen any.
I expected a lot and didn't really see any. But we love New York. It's been a great place to hold a convention.
Have you heard about the number of arrests there have been of protesters?
Say that again.
The number of arrests.
There weren't anything, were there?
There were close to 2,000.
Oh, really?
I did read that in the paper.
Uh-huh. I think the city police did an unbelievable job.
We're so excited
in
New York.
They did an unbelievable job getting us in here, getting us out of here. as safe as possible, as cutting down the hassles as much as possible for the New Yorkers. It was just a great experience. I thought it was excellent.
Some of the delegates coming out of Madison Square Garden last night. And I did hear this over and over again. Delegates saying that they hardly saw protesters, that it was minimal, that they weren't aware of the arrests. Medea Benjamin.
Well, I don't know what city they were in, because you couldn't go around the city without seeing protesters. Everywhere you went, you saw the buttons of George Bush with this stripe through it. You saw no war signs in the windows.
But everywhere you went, they were in a very different world. And protesters were so cordoned off in many cases.
But there was an area also where protesters were close to the Madison Square Garden and would be waiting for delegates coming in and out, telling them, you know, end to the war, stop the occupation. We were at their hotels. We did marches in the mornings going from hotel to hotel to hotel, talking to delegates. So they saw us everywhere. I think this is a planned strategy to, say, downplay the
right.
demonstrations.
I would agree with you. I think that what happened is that the Republican delegates all got talking points. Mm-hmm. from their own party, what to say to the press in terms of the minimal impact that the demonstrations had. Because especially in the Broadway area, where many of them were in the restaurants, there was no way that they could have avoided seeing the demonstrations. They just sought to then downplay them. But I'd like to ask you, what about the efficacy of even of the protests, especially of the ones in the garden, which were the ones basically that the national press would see even more? What's your response to those who say that they were largely ineffective and momentary, and what good were they able to accomplish?
Well, they just put the Republican Party in a fury. They had them calling the stations. I got calls from the major networks last night telling them how furious the Republicans were. I mean, their only message is security, 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 security. We will build Fortress America. They won't be able to get in here. And then they have 10,000 security guards at the Madison Square Garden, and they can't keep out this group of women and their friends. I mean, they were so upset. And I think that is indicative that, you know, you can't build a fortress big enough. You can't build a wall high enough. They know that in Israel. We know that in, quote, Fortress America. And now we see it in Fortress
Republican
Party.
It's interesting, the strategy that was used on the floor of the convention over these last few days. Anytime a protester managed to engage in an action, you'd immediately hear four more years, and then banners would go up around the person. They would have a certain set of placards, and the security was as interested in stopping the press from photographing anything. In fact, when John McCain singled out Michael Moore, and he was actually in the convention center, they immediately put up banners over his face, and security moved in and formed a ring to prevent journalists from getting to Michael Moore's area, who was there legally, and he hadn't engaged in a disruption. John McCain pointed him out. We're joined also in the studio by someone who has been protesting throughout the week. I first saw Fernando in front of Fox News doing the same thing, holding up his son's picture. Fernando, you have been here holding your son's picture on the front line of the protests throughout this week. Two nights ago, you got into the convention center. Where were you standing?
All right. Thank you. I am next to the television area inside the patio.
We'll just say that Fernando's voice is extremely hoarse because, I guess because of this last week, Fernando Suarez de Solar.
Yeah, and when the Laura Bush is finished the speaker, and I open my sign, my son picture, and say, Bush lie, my son die. And the security people got with me and asked me for my ID. I showed my ID. And I say, you're going to under-arrest me, it's okay, but remember, I pay high price for my liberty, for speech, and for manifestation with my son's life. You're going to arrest me right now. And you don't believe me, but nobody arrest me. And I inside about the 2 hours with my sign open, and all delegation, Texas, California, and the other people see my sign in the lobby.
And what was the reaction of some of the Republican delegates who saw you inside?
Wow, this one is splendid. A lot of people, right, no attack me, but they say with the adamants, just bad or something like this. But around maybe 20 go with me and say, I'm sorry, you is right. When I don't believe this one, the Republican people told me, you is right when my sign say Bush lie and my son die. It's incredible, this one.
Your son, the fifth to die, your son, Marine Lance Corporal Jesus Suarez.
Yes, and it's because I say Bush lie, because remember, the Bush administration lied me about what happened my son when he died, about the enemy fire and the realist cluster bomb, illegal cluster bomb. And I here in New York for show the people the other lies, the Bush administration. And is very happy this week here in New York, more than 500,000 people demand end the occupation and demand no more 4 years for Bush.
We should also say that Fernando managed to get inside a speech that George Bush Sr. was giving about the opportunities the Bush administration has given to the Hispanic community with the same sign and the same message.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, who infiltrated both the Democratic and Republican national conventions and was thrown out. And Fernando Suarez del Solar, father of Marine Lance Corporal Jesus Suarez, made it to the convention holding that sign, Bush lies, my son dies. Also, the other co-founder of Code Pink, Gail Murphy, who made it to the floor as well. The third co-founder, Jody Evans, where is she?
She's still being held in custody. She was taken in last night along with June Bashir's, and so far they're still being held.
Thanks for joining us. We come back. We continue to cover the protests and the parties. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, the battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Yes, well, on Wednesday, 11 AIDS activists from the group ACT UP were arrested after they breached the Madison Square Garden Convention Hall and briefly interrupted a speech by White House Chief of Staff Andrew Carr to young Republicans. They have now been charged with assault and inciting a riot.
We're joined now by Chris Hermes, who is a member of ACT UP Philadelphia. He was among the members of ACT UP to be arrested. Describe the protest.
Well, we entered the convention to expose the naked truth about Bush's policies on AIDS and to urge him to call for 100% debt cancellation for at least 50 of the poorest nations in the world.
And what did you do exactly?
Well, we sat on the floor in the New York delegation area, and when Andrew Card began to speak, we blew whistles, stood up on the chairs, and chanted and held signs. There was a banner that was attempted to be unfurled and then proceeded to be assaulted by young Republicans.
What do you mean you continued to be assaulted? Because the charge is the other way around.
Yeah, unfortunately, there were no young Republicans that were taken off with assault charges. However, we were not able to stand on the chairs for more than probably a minute before we were assaulted by Republicans around us.
Now, there were some camera video that showed at least one of the Republican young people kicking someone who was down, kicking him repeatedly and admitting to kicking the person repeatedly.
Right.
Well, Juan, let's go to the Channel 7 report on WABC. They were there. They filmed this. This is their report. This is how they told the story on Wednesday, WABC's report.
The White House chief of staff had just taken the stage when chaos erupted on the floor of the Republican Youth Convention. At least 10 protesters ripped off their shirts and coats to reveal anti-Bush signs. They unfurled a black banner criticizing Bush's AIDS policy as the crowd and the Secret Service closed in. Within seconds, the violence had begun. One young man was pushed off his chair, and we caught one young Republican on camera shoving a female protester. He doesn't stop there. Watch. He's kicking her over and over as she falls to the floor.
That report from WABC, that's very different from what the police account of this is. And they have the video documentation for those who are listening on radio right now. Chris, so how many of you charged?
There were 11 of us charged while doing a protest on the floor. We are part of the group that was also protesting the previous Thursday in a naked action in front of Madison Square Garden.
Why naked?
We wanted to bring attention to Bush's policies on AIDS by explaining that the naked truth is that he is not doing what's necessary to address the pandemic that's killing millions of people on the planet.
And how long were you held, and what were you charged with?
I was held for approximately 30 hours, and I was charged with inciting a riot, assault, and disorderly conduct.
Well, my knowledge of assault, at least, is that you have to have someone actually injured to even be charged with assault.
There is a claim that an anonymous person has claimed that they were hit by someone.
Well, we're going to continue talking about these protests. Over 1,700 people have been arrested in convention-related protests over the last week, 1,100 of them in just one day. The vast majority jailed at Pier 57, a three-story block-long pier that's been converted to a temporary holding pen. Yesterday, a New York Supreme Court judge ordered the release of all the convention protesters held for more than 24 hours without being arraigned. The judge also found the city in contempt of court for failing to meet that state-mandated deadline. A hearing set for next week to determine the penalty, which could reach $1,000 for each illegally detained protester.
Detainees began trickling out of 100 Center Street Wednesday night, where scores of supporters greeted them. But many of those outside waited in vain for their friends and loved ones who remained inside. Yesterday afternoon, parents of detained protesters held an impromptu press conference outside the criminal courthouse. This is what one father had to say.
My son was arrested Tuesday night at a demonstration, a peaceful, nonviolent demonstration. He wasn't allowed to disperse. They threw the nets up on one end of the block and on the other end of the block and swept everybody up on the block. I have not been in contact with him since that Tuesday night. I know he hasn't seen a lawyer. This morning, I've been here to wait for him to get out, to find out some kind of information. I went this morning and pinned a note on the fence back at the parking lot. And I got to admit, that's something that I thought would happen in another country under a dictatorship, that when parents have children that are disappeared by the state, that they pin a note to their child on a fence saying, if you get out, please contact me at this number. I never thought I would ever do that in this country, to have to do that to my child exercising his freedom to be able to demonstrate in this country. We talked to a parent who also, son just was just recently released. That son spent a day in the hospital, and the parent had no idea that he was taken to the hospital or spent the day in the hospital. When my son was arrested, we got an arrest number for him. We took the arrest number to try to get an arraignment time for that. We said he hadn't been processed. When we showed that we had an arrest number, they said, where did you get that from? Later on that night, that number disappeared off of the computer. They said, well, maybe your son has been released. We went to the place where we knew he would go. He wasn't there. We came back this morning and found out that the arrest number had been changed from what it was previously. No one has any information. I'm now in a situation where my son has been disappeared by this state, by the government of this country, by the police force, and I'm pinning notes to a fence in a city park saying, son, if you get out, please contact me. Love, Dad. I never thought I would ever have to do that in this country. It breaks my heart for where we live, and it breaks my heart for what my son is going through right now.
Tim Duncan, father of one of the detainees held at Pier 57. We end this show today with Donna Lieberman, executive director of the New York chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Can you respond?
You know, all week I have been talking about how it's been a mixed bag in terms of policing. There's been, you know, some good moves by the police department in protecting protests, and then there's been some problems. But yesterday, down at 100 Center Street, when it was clear that the city, notwithstanding the judge's order to release people who had been held 24, 36, 48 hours on these minor offenses, I realized that I had been snookered. It was clear that preventive detention was the name of the game, that the city was taking people off the streets, and that here we had the ironic situation where the lawyers for those who were arrested were working within the system, got a court order, and the city was in contempt. It was really stunning. And I think in the weeks and months to come, as the lawsuits that are inevitable from the bad arrests, from the preventive detentions, from Pier 57 proceed, that in the course of the investigation for those lawsuits, we'll learn a lot about just what the city was trying to do.
But Donna Lieberman, this MO now has been apparent for those of us who've been covering these protests around the country now for years now, ever since Seattle. The moves of most police departments when they have these mass demonstrations is to lock as many people as possible up, keep them off the streets, and then deal with the fines and the court actions later. Is there anything that civil liberties groups are going to do in the future to be able to prevent this kind of mass preventive detention from happening in the future?
Well, you know, we thought we had it down, you know, we set up a storefront. We had monitors out at every demonstration. The Guild was on the case with you know, ready to take writs deal with preventive detention when it was going on, and we did what we thought we needed to. I think that as we bring to light who's responsible and why, you know, it may be that there's political change that is the solution, but we need to find out, you know, who's responsible, and then I think we can figure out how to fix it. It's just stunning that every time there's a political convention, democracy in action, the government engages in this kind of
Donna Lieberman, we have to leave it there, and I thank you very much for being with us as we wrap up the show with a remarkable team of producers who made this program happen. Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Anna Nagar Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill, Jenny Filippazzo, Alpa Patel, Daniel Cashin, Orlando Richard, John Randolph, Uri Galad, Angela Alston, Chris Zucker, and so many others in the India media world. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. See you in Asheville tonight.